This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old Gordon Caldas, a longtime resident of Grand Forks, North Dakota. In fact, he was the city attorney there, even state's attorney. He's in the University of North Dakota Athletics Hall of Fame. In fact, if you visit the library at his alma mater, you'll find a copy of his World War II memoirs. But you don't have to go all the way to Grand Forks to read that if you don't want to. I have that 57-page document detailing this PT boat commander's experience linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. One image that you'll see if you do that is General Douglas MacArthur wading ashore on the island of Leyte in the Philippines in October of 1944. And Gordon, you were there that day. You saw him head into the beach. But I think you can give us a little more context on MacArthur and on why PT boats had to be part of his return to the Philippines.
That goes back to Pearl Harbor. You see, MacArthur was in charge of all the forces in the Pacific. He was living on Corregidor, which is in the bay of where Manila is. His wife and young son were with him. And there were PT boats in the Philippines at that time. And one of them was Admiral, then boat captain, Bulkley, who I got acquainted with after the war. Bulkley took MacArthur and his wife and son to Australia. And I think there were several boats that made that trip. Bulkley was in charge. He had the family aboard his boat. But of course, the Japanese knew that he was there. And of course, Japan is just above the Philippines. But when he left and after he had arrived safely in Australia, he said, "I shall return." That was a famous statement.
And you were there when he fulfilled that promise and waded back ashore on Leyte.
He came in on a battle wagon, but all of our boats were right around the battle wagon and many other boats. Our two squadrons were just laying around in the water there and watching. MacArthur came in on the 524 boat, and so we were right there next to him. And then the 524 drove in towards shore and all lined up on the beach of Leyte Beach were newsreel cameras. There must have been a half a block of them. He got on the PT boat and went in, they drove him in till they got into the shallow water. And then he transferred to a little smaller boat that had a flap on the front, and they took him the rest of the way in. And then he waded ashore and with all these newsreel cameras, and us observing it, too.
Yeah, what was your vantage point? How close to all of that were you?
We were within 200 or 300 feet. We were right next to it, you know.
Did it feel like a historic moment to you?
Oh, yes. Yes, it did.
When you think back on those days, what is it that you take pride in all these years later? What is it that comes to mind for you that makes you proud?
I know one thing. In PT boats, they're really, they're intimate, you know. You get to know your crew. You got a small crew. There gets to be a real friendship. You've only got two officers out there and then enlisted men. I think that that we and our enlisted men were just about perfect, and not in a friendship way that you might imagine. You were really friends. But there's always this difference in, you know, you've got to be the boss. But I was never one, I was never a shouter or yeller or anything like that. Maybe I was kind of shy. I was not pals with my crew. But I felt that they all really liked me, you know, or at least maybe admired me.
Because of the way they treated you with respect, it made you feel like you were doing something right.
Right, right.
I can tell that brings emotions back even today. Were you still over there when the war came to an end?
Yes, I was in Borneo. After Leyte, they sent our two squadrons to Borneo. One of the first things the Japanese took over was Borneo because of the oil wells. And so we were handy. We discovered that all the oil wells were in the interior of Borneo, Dutch Borneo. And so we had to go in rivers and streams and so on to get in there. So that was kind of hairy because, you know, there's no place to run, you know, or even dodge. But anyway, we got in there and the Australian troops were there. The Aussies had sent them there. So then we coordinated with the Australians. You see, the Japanese still had possession of the interior. What we were going to do in our smaller way is to soften up the invasion beach. We set up two squadrons of boats, single file. We'd go back and forth along this east coast of Dutch Borneo. Some of our boats had 5-inch rockets, but we all had 40s and 30s and anti-tank guns and so on. So single file, we went back and forth across that east coast of Dutch Borneo and saturated that jungle. Then the Australians invaded, and as far as I know, they cleaned up the Japanese.
And so that's where you were when you heard Japan had surrendered? How significant a moment was that, and how did you guys react?
Oh, I think it was a big thrill, you know, a big thrill to know that it was over. You know, you were kind of sad for all the Japanese people that were killed, you know, too. You felt sorry for the population. But, of course, the Japanese were a bitter enemy.
Well, and I guess you had some pretty good reasons to get home. You had to go see if that wife had waited around for you, huh? What was that reunion like when you got back to the States and saw her again?
I might just say I was one of the first two officers that were sent back from Dutch Borneo. Uh-huh. I guess two officers came. So I was 522, the first boat. Then Jim Wolfe was in the 523. The two of us were the first ones to come back of the officers in our squadrons.
So where was it, and what was it like when you saw Lenore again after all that time overseas? When, honestly, I'm sure there were times where you weren't sure you were coming home.
Well, of course, you know, I was on high, you know, because I was going home and arriving home, and we were the first two officers leaving the squadrons. Oh, incidentally, we had to hitchhike from Borneo.
It's got to be a little hard to hitchhike from Borneo. There isn't exactly a land bridge there to get you back to the States. How'd you do that?
Well, we found an airport, an Army airport, and you see, there's nothing on Dutch Borneo. But anyway, our officers located the nearest airport, and that was in New Guinea. By golly, we got into the tail end of New Guinea, so we got on a plane and got the first leg out. Then we got aboard a troop ship while we had to ride that troop ship all the way back to Long Beach. It takes a couple of weeks to get back from where we were in Asia.
So after that long, long journey home, you get to Long Beach, you get off the ship, and who tapped you on the shoulder?
Clark Gable.
The Clark Gable.
The Clark Gable, yes. And I recognized his voice right away. But very friendly. He queried me a little bit, you know, what I'd been doing. And this was in front of the Ambassador Hotel. But at any rate, I didn't know that I had a baby.
Talk about burying the lead here. So she had never told you that she was expecting or anything?
Never got a letter all for a year in the South Pacific because we were on the move all the time.
So you never even received a single letter the whole time?
Not a single letter.
So she had written to you saying, hey, we're going to have a baby, but you had no idea. Did you have any, was that ever a thought in your mind? Hey, maybe she could be pregnant?
No, no. Never, it never occurred to me, yeah.
So you're in for a bit of a surprise here, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, oh gosh.
So how did you get that news? What was the first you found out?
Well, when I walked in the door, I didn't know about the baby.
And where was this? Where was she?
In Grand Forks.
So you get back to Grand Forks, North Dakota. You think, hey, I'm going to see my beautiful bride again. Open up the door, and voila.
Right. But, you know, we were out nowhere. You know, once we hit New Guinea, you know, it was jungle.
And had that caused her some concern, not being able to get in touch with you?
You know, I don't know that it could have. I don't know. or she never admitted it, or, you know, or...
What was that reunion like? How did she greet you?
Oh, gosh, I think I hugged her, and probably for 24 hours.
Well, it couldn't have been all 24 hours, because there's a baby running around somewhere.
I'm just kidding, but anyway, it was a good hug. Yeah.
How did you deal with that, the fact that all of a sudden you're a father? You never even knew that was coming.
Well, it was so sudden, you know. I don't know that I really, really could get that excited. Well, I'm sure I was excited, you know. And of course, I loved seeing her and seeing the baby. I couldn't believe that. See, I didn't probably get letters, because they're probably lost. Because when we moved, you know, we were never in a place very long, and we lived aboard the boats, so we weren't getting mail. Even our tender ships weren't getting any mail, because they were moving, and so we lived on our boats in the open sea.
And I'm sure you're aware that there were a lot of babies whose fathers never came home from World War II, and had that happened to you, you never would have known that there was a baby that didn't have a daddy.
That's true, yeah.
I imagine just thinking about that brings a lot of emotion, not to mention the other four children you'd have and all the grandchildren and great-grandchildren. When you think back on all that, you think about the kamikazes and the different enemy forces you encountered and all the dangerous situations you were in, do you feel like there was something or someone protecting you along the way?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, I was... You know, I was very fortunate, yeah. Yeah, you thank God.
And was that something that was a real conscious thing for you at the time, or just something over time you said, yeah, God must have been looking out for me?
Yes, God was looking after me.
Well, I know we've covered a lot of ground here. I want to make sure that I say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story, because no one else could. Is there anything else that you think we need to know about you or the guys you served with?
You really felt like you knew your crew. You see, you didn't associate with even other PT boat crews because of the circumstances. Once we got dropped in the water in New Guinea, you know, you lived on your boat. And while I was never, you know, palsy-walsy with them, you know, we were always gentlemen to one another, and, you know, I never got angry at my men at all. I admired them because I had such a great crew, so capable and amiable, you know, and I'm sure that probably all, you know, maybe most crews were good. The nature, you know, of it, you were more friends.
It was more shoulder to shoulder than top down?
Right, right, right.
And that seems how the atmosphere is here at the Veterans Home of California in Fresno. What do you like about living here with all these other veterans?
I really enjoy it. I think the environment here is really beautiful. It's literally beautiful, you know. You walk around here and the employees are so nice and helpful and polite, and couldn't be better, you know. I think the meals are good. Everything is clean, and it's attractive. Flowers, trees, shrubs, well kept. So I really lucked out, I think. We don't have anything like this back home.
Well, we didn't have anything like this here for a long time until some people were really determined, and Charlie Waters has his bust out there for a reason. I know you also have been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. What did you get out of that when you stood there and you saw the different displays and you saw those gold stars representing the 400,000 who never came home from World War II? What did you get out of that whole experience?
I really got a thrill. I really did. Yeah. Well, I got tears in my eyes. Yeah, it's really impressive.
Well, that matches what just about every other veteran who has visited that memorial has said, at least all of those that I've talked to, whether they went with honor flight groups or just on their own. And impressive is a word, I'm sure, that has been used to describe Gordon Caldas a time or two over the years. Thanks again to the Veterans Home of California, where this interview was recorded. It is a very special place that's going to be a blessing to veterans for a long, long time. We're out of time this time on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping to remind you through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.